This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Well, good evening. Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. This is Jenny White, and tonight we will be discussing or wondering, and maybe we can get an answer to the question, why are the people in Africa starving? We know that drought, poor harvest, and instability create a cycle that is extremely difficult to break. When instability persists because of conflict or political problems, people flee their homes or are unable to plant their crops. Then less food gets harvested. Prices go up and families' livelihoods prospects dwindle as markets close. Violent conflict makes situations worse because humanitarian groups often cannot access affected communities to bring emergency relief. Droughts have become more frequent and intense in recent years in Western, Eastern, and Southern Africa. These droughts affect food production systems in fragile contexts in similar ways that conflict does. Less food and water also means vast numbers of dead livestock in affected areas. This devastates families' source of income and food. And that's only a couple of the reasons why Africa is having such an issue with feeding their people. So, listeners, I want you to give me what you think your idea would be as to why they are starving. Now, why are they facing chronic hunger? Trying to research that, it said that recurring drought, conflict, and have led to severe food shortages. Many countries have struggled with extreme poverty for decades, so they lack government and community support systems to help their struggling families. A compressed cycle of recurring drought is plunging the same communities into drought again before they have a chance to recover sufficiently from the last one. From March through May, in 2018, the long rains have been 150 to 200% above normal in some East Africa locations. This will bring some relief to herders as livestock benefit from renewed grasslands. However, in many places, flash floods and overflowing rivers have wiped out crops, roads, and bridges, thwarting both cultivation and relief activities. In these kinds of conditions, poor families can't afford enough food to keep their children healthy, and eventually they need emergency help from government agencies when they run out of money and food. We're not talking low funds or food that's been in our pantry that's well past its expiration. We're talking about having any money or any food at all, nothing. So we find that we do have, I know when at my church sometimes we collect canned goods and we have to make a statement to say no expiration food that has been passed. Now, I know maybe if you're like me, sometimes I use things that have passed their expiration dates, but I would never give it to anyone. But I just would like to know, and if any of you guys have an answer, Africa is a very, very, those people on that continent have diamonds. They walk on diamonds. It's a very rich company. I mean, it's not a country, continent. So why do you think that they are hungry or they have less food? And we have one of the people that most of us know, and that's Colin Kaepernick, who went to Africa to deliver food to help them out. So we have to do everything we can, but he was having problems trying to get over there. If any of you know anything about that, just press the 1 on your phone and we can discuss it. Right now, I'm going to take a break and we'll be back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show.
If you are in need of life insurance, auto or home insurance, or need help in getting out of debt, call your helpful insurance agents at Prime Financial Services. Did you know if you add a child rider to your life insurance policy, you can add multiple children for the price of one, starting at $10,000 worth of coverage for under $10. Call today for a free quote at 313-293-0979. Mention you heard this ad on this show for a free gift.
This is Carla Cook, daughter of the legendary Sam Cooke, on tour now with wondrous stories, the life and music of my father, Sam Cooke. You can find me at CarlaCook.com. Remember, that's Cook with an E. And follow my Facebook page at The Carla Cook. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at The Carla Cook. I hope to see you soon on stage in a city near you.
We'll be right back after these messages.
My name is Sheila White. I am the president and co-founder of Her Cries Are Heard, an organization that focuses on preventing violence against females. 1 in 3 women have been victims of physical abuse or violence by an intimate partner or non-partner within their lifetime. 94% of women killed by men were murdered by someone they knew. Violence can affect a woman's physical and mental health and also negatively affect her children. In 1991, my sister was murdered by her husband. And in 2013, my niece was murdered by a man who followed her home from a party. Being a victim of violence is devastating to the victim and the victim's family. Help us to help you. Help us to prevent this from happening to you or someone you love. Please look at our website, www.hercriesareheard.org, for the prevention tools and referrals to help save lives.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White. Okay, we're back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. And tonight we're talking about the people in Africa starving. Although we know that there are some people in Detroit that are starving as well. And we do the best that we can to try to, well, some of us do, some of us don't. It's just a choice that you make. But hopefully, if you see someone standing on a corner in the cold that you would think that maybe they needed help. And you can't judge them and say, well, I'm not going to give them any money because they're just going to buy some alcohol or buy cigarettes or whatever. But once you give them the money, it's theirs to do with what they want. So if you no longer have, you know, the authority to tell them what they can or cannot do. So right now I see someone has a question or would like to make a comment. So hello, you're on the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show.
The hello, Jenny White. How are you?
People in Africa are starving. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think a lot of people starving, you know. Like you
well,
said, people in Detroit that's starving as well. And that was something I was thinking about even as recently as tonight in regards to helping people that are standing on corners or by the freeways that are homeless and that, you know, are asking for money. I don't always give, and sometimes on occasion my daughter has wanted to give homeless people money standing on the corner, and I've had to kind of educate her and let her know that she can't give everybody her money. You know, it's good to be generous, and this is just talking about homeless people, you know, here in the city. But then, you know, I kind of had a change of heart when, you know, somebody's standing on the same corner and it's 17 degrees, you know, I kind of look at it like, you know, I'm sure they don't really want to be out here in the cold, you know, begging it. So, you know, at that point, I think I'm a little more generous. And then there's been people that have been in the same place for years.
That's true. That's true.
You know, and some, I wave and continue to ride by. So I don't know if it just seems like there's more people out now that are in those positions. And I don't know. I kind of check myself. I mean, I can't support everybody that's homeless is asking me, you know, for some money. And sometimes you give them some money and they, you know, they look at you like you're crazy because it's not enough or not what they wanted or expected. You know, so like, okay, I'm grateful to you. You know, so
I ran into a situation like that. I went into, where was I? I think Josh and I were in, where were we? We were over at the Myers on 8 Mile. And there was a guy out there, and he had on like a sweater, and it was kind of cold. So I went into Subway, and he told me, he said, Grandma, he said he was hungry. So I said, well, go tell him to come in, because, see, I don't mind feeding anybody. So he
right.
came in. I told him to pick out what he wanted, you know, and he did. And after he got that and he sat down, he came back up and asked me, he said, well, can I have $6.47? And I'm, you know, well, he got the food. He didn't get the money.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, you have to make a choice. If he had asked me to buy him a coat or a jacket or something, I would have done that.
Right.
To see
right.
him not being out there in the cold. But for me, you
right.
say you're hungry and I feed you, and then you come up and ask me for some money, too? So,
yeah,
well,
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, it gets a little touchy. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, some people look at you like you're crazy. They'll look at what you gave them and comment, you know, and be like.
Right.
I'll be
right.
like, okay, and don't even say thank you, you know, in some instances. Like, wow.
That's
okay,
true.
Whatever.
That's true.
You know,
but, you know,
so,
I don't do it for the thanks. I know we came out of another situation, and we went into McDonald's to get something to eat, and there was a guy there, and he said he was hungry. So I said, well, look at the menu and get whatever you wanted. So that, you know, I bought him what he wanted, and then I sat down to eat. I didn't pay any attention to him. So when we got up to walk out, the security guard said, you know, he threw that food in the garbage.
Wow.
Yes. So that really kind of bummed me out. I mean, what you going to do? Don't tell me you're hungry, because I will feed you.
Wow.
But, you know, I don't, I don't know. Yeah, I guess you have to just be moved by the Holy Spirit. If he says give, then you give. But I understand what you're saying when you can't get everybody. Now, if I give somebody $5 and then I run into somebody else, oh, my gosh, well, what do I do? Because I don't have any more money, you know.
Yeah, and then we don't want to be sitting there digging, you know, for your money or pulling out your wallet or your purse, you know, because some people will rob you, you know. And I read a story that, you know, lady was riding in the car on the passenger side. You know, lady was asking for some money. She went to give her some money, and a man ran out from, you know, he was hiding. He ran out and tried to grab her purse, you know, so she's holding on to her purse, and he shot her. You know,
oh, my gosh.
She ended up dying, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, you know, you have to be careful, and that's like people, you know, at the gas pumps and all that. I'll pump your gas and, you know, those type of things.
Yeah, but that's the very reason I go to Sam's Club, too. Because when I go to Sam's Club, I don't have that situation.
So,
you know,
so
that's...
You have to be careful. You know, people out, you know, you go into the liquor store or something, and, you know, convenience store, and people, you know, you got any spare change? You got any spare change? You know, can I,
nah,
can
I
get...
Do that.
You know,
mm-mm.
Yeah,
if
so,
I see enough guys hanging around, I'm gone. I am gone. I'm not stopping.
Yeah, you have
it's crazy, but you know what? The thing is, you can be as careful as you can be, but, I mean, you can sit up in your house and get shot. Well, what you going to do?
Yeah,
you can be in your house. I was listening to the news the other day, and this mother said her son was in his room watching television, and somebody was out shooting. A stray bullet hit that child in his head. And
the mother came, a couple blocks away.
Yeah. And when, absolutely. I don't know what kind of gun he had, but then all he could say was, Mama, I love you. I mean, how devastating is that? And then he died.
Oh, did he die? I didn't know he died.
Yes, he died. Sitting in his room. So,
no, I didn't know he died.
Yeah, he passed away. So,
I don't know.
Hold on a second.
Yeah,
hold on, because I have another guest. Hello, you'd like to make a point? Ask a question?
Yes,
make
I do.
Comment.
How are you? Jenny White Radio. Just fine. And talking about the African problem of the continent, that's one of the richest, if not the richest continent left in the world, so to speak, with all the resources. But the problem, one big problem I have read about, is they're still suffering from the colonialism that they were, you know, that was forced upon them through enslavement and things of that nature. And European countries that colonized them used their land for making basic products, you know, that was for shipping out, not for feeding the African people. And it eroded a lot of the land. You know, that's a very rich country, as you can plant any time in Africa. But because of that, and then when they started having the problem of them breaking away and trying to get their freedom and things of that nature, sure, they might have gotten maybe a president or this or that. There was no money. because everything was usually going out of Africa. At one point, Africa was almost short. There was a strange shortage of men to men and families because so many of them had been shipped off for enslavement and things of that nature. One big problem that they do face is the tribalism. They can't get it together. They're still separate as far as tribalism is concerned. And the way they look at women, I was interested in when Zimbabwe was fighting for their freedom. Now, the woman was in the villages and things of that nature, but then they had to get out and help to fight for the freedom, along with the black man there. And so they fought in the, being women, they got there, they fought, they faced everything. But as soon as the freedom was won, and that was under Robert Mugabe, then what happened was they went back to the village to be just women, but because of them serving alongside the men, that they were looked at differently. A lot of the women that came out of the armies and things of that nature during that time, they had to be, in order to, they weren't accepted in the villages anymore, they became like prostitutes on the street just to live. So then they started a women's movement because they had helped to fight and win the freedom for Zimbabwe. And they started a movement there. But the biggest problem is they're still suffering from the colonialism. Now, it was my understanding that some of the crops that they were growing, like corn and things of that nature, they were taking the corn and trying to make some type of oil base that they could use, I believe, for, you know, for transportation and things of that nature. And the villages are still suffering, you know, things of that nature. Then the big thing is they keep fighting over and over again. And then a big thing that they're having a problem with is the illness, sickness. An epidemic can go through and just wipe out an entire village, like the Ebola thing. There was the Ebola bacteria or something, whether it was man-made or whatever. A lot of the countries were trying to, as they say, bring food into them. But, you know, somebody can bring you a bowl of wheat or whatever, but it's no good unless you can make it and give and you know, get it for yourself. And because then it's a continual thing. Another big problem is people do not look at this, but they are still being enslaved by way of the Arab nation. They still are enslaving black people there. Some of that, like on Rod Parsley, he talked about buying the slaves back. And it was $35, they could buy a person's life or buy this. But then after paying for it, they would go back and re-enslave that person. So it's just a vicious cycle that's going on there. All around a lot of the African nation, they believe in enslavement. They believe that black people are destined to just be nothing but slaves. That's a very big problem.
Yeah, that's true.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So
all those rich diamonds.
And everything, and they still.
That's under the Jews, the Berber. I think it's called the Berbers. They know how to use the diamonds, not only the diamonds, but when you look at your cell phone, your flat screen TV, there is a certain material or resource that's coming out of Africa that they have to dig for. And I forgot what the name of it was, but this thing is in your cell phones, your flat screen TVs, and they're also looking at this resource or this for the electric car. So, you know, it's a huge market for it. And they have to go into the ground and dig for it. And my understanding that in digging for it, a lot of the African people are getting sick because it gives them a respiratory problem, a serious respiratory problem. I read that someplace recently. But that's how come we have the cell phones and the flat screen televisions. And now, you know, looking at the auto show here in Detroit, they're talking about the electric car, the electronic car, whatever they want to call it, you know.
But from my understanding, they're not selling as well the electric cars.
Uh-huh. They're going to improve on it because of the oil situation. They're going to improve on it to get it on the road. But some type of material that they have to use in order to, and look at, they keep improving the cell phone from the flip phone to the this phone to the that phone, and you know, you very seldom hear of a landline now. You know, they're trying to do away with that, you know. But that's
yeah,
a lot of material that's coming out of Africa.
Repairing them. But I don't understand why you can do away with that. You have senior citizens that need those landlines.
Okay, but that's how come that now they're giving out free phones. You know, the government giving out free phones to the seniors and prescriptions and things like that. Because they can always tie into your cell phone, you know. It's easier. But it's one big problem. And as far as surgeries are concerned, I get this paper on the Mercy ship that goes around, and you see these pink kids with the cleft lips and the palates and things of that nature. They do all of this surgery and things of that nature, but they just haven't been – they won't leave them alone, but they can really develop.
But
and then when
we
went,
that, it was ahead. Really sad about that little boy from Africa who had that tumor on his face.
That's nothing compared to what I see. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
did
go ahead.
About
that's
that
nothing.
Face?
What, the little boy had a tumor on his face?
The little boy that had that huge tumor on his face.
No, I don't know if I'm aware of that.
You didn't hear that? He came over to America to get it operated on, and something went wrong with the anesthesia or something, and he ended up dying.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really,
okay.
Yeah. It is a sad. It grows until, you know, you see a lot. When I let my grandchildren see the picture of a lot of the surgery, the eyes, the face, the neck, all of this, the tumors that are growing, they try to... Hopefully it's not cancer, but what it does, it keeps growing until it maybe cuts off their wind and they suffocate.
Yeah.
All of this is happening. Yeah. Well, you keep wondering, this is a very rich country.
Yes,
and
why would they have so many issues? I know
they
Colin
do.
Kaepernick, I did look that up, and he was going over there. He wanted to go back to his roots.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah, that's why he went to Africa.
Another thing that in talking about Mr. Kaepernick, he, in order to try to ship food there, he had to go by way of Turkey to get a plane to fly the food into certain areas there, you know. And it's very expensive what he's doing, but he's trying to feed them.
Well,
they say
that he has taken on multiple humanitarian efforts. He's helping the homeless in San Francisco. He's donating to Meals on Wheels. He's raising funds for a struggling population of Somalia. He's donated $700,000 to charity over the past 9 months as part of a pledge last season where he promised to donate $1 million to help communities. So, friend must have a little bit of change.
Hey, yeah,
well,
probably running.
Yeah, I think he signed $20 million.
A lot of people are trying to donate, too.
What'd you say,
babe? I think he signed a $20 million contract before he started, you know, before he got out of work.
Okay.
So he at least had about $20 million. Yeah,
oh, wait a minute. What did you say? It's hard to hear you?
No, I said I think he had signed a $20 million contract before he ended up getting...
He signed a $20 million contract?
I think he had a $20 million contract before he got blackballed out the league.
Is this lawsuit still going on?
I'm sure it is. I haven't heard much about it, but I'm sure it's still
so
still
what
out
you're
there.
Saying
sure.
Is they have to pay him even if he's not working?
No, they're not paying him at all. I think he got whatever money he got. I think he got it from the NFL.
Well, he probably got a little from Nike with that commercial, but it didn't stay on that long.
Well, I mean, it was a cycle, you know, it cycled during that time. They still got it, you know, so who knows?
I haven't seen it anymore.
No,
but it was popular.
Yeah, but back to back to Africa. You know, Lucy made a lot of valid points in reference to colonialism and a lot of things that are going on there on the continent that has gotten it to where it is now. I know in South Africa, when Mandela became president and they took a lot of the land from the white people, they, you know, because the white people were the minority anyway, you know. It was more African, black Africans than it was, you know, white Africans. But they had, you know, they owned probably 95% of the land, you know.
Right.
So now they're crying, you know, foul and victims, you know, saying they're being discriminated against because their land is being taken or has been taken. So they're complaining, trying to get some of their property back. But, you know, all that's been by design. You know, China's over there.
You know, that's interesting that you bring that up because I was listening to someone, and this man said he was a Chinese African.
Okay.
Now, how you work that out, you know, but they gave them title to the land, you know.
Well,
and in South Africa, you hear them, a lot of the white there say that they have ancestors that relate, and they ask them, well, what tribe? And all of them used to say the Zulu.
Okay.
They have some ancestors within the Zulu. Yeah, the Zulu,
okay.
You know.
You guys can hold on. I have another person who wants to make a comment or ask a question. Hello,
sure.
404.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing
good,
fine.
Good.
How are
you? I'm good. Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple quick comments real quick.
What's your name, sir?
Nah, what's up?
All right.
Yeah, so I guess first things first, I guess the best thing to start with on this would probably be if you get a chance, just look up the Berlin Conference. This was in the late 1800s. This was when they basically, European powers sat down and carved up the continent of Africa, which is now basically 53 countries when we're talking about the continent. So it's a lot of different things. So, yeah, there's a lot of troubled areas and there's some areas that are thriving, but we get the story of black misleadership or corruption, but we don't get the other side of it. And the other side of the book that I would recommend is Walter Rodney's How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Really good book. It's old, but it's still a really good book. And the place you were talking about was the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and that mineral is coltan. Mineral.
Yeah.
Right, because it's determining who can make and produce TV, cell phones, all these different, you know, tech things that we see. And then I guess take a look at French West Africa. Look up the currency exchange and the deals that they're locked into. Now, we just yesterday passed the anniversary of Patrice Lumumba from the Congo, one of the, you know, great statesmen who decided that they were going to fight for independence. And you see what happened to Patrice, and you'll get an understanding of what happened in Africa. Basically, if anyone stands up enough to Abixels and say that the things in the ground and above belong to them, then they have to fight with the European powers who will try to assassinate, discredit, or starve a country until they get a leader in place who will do what they want, meaning ship out things, not finished goods, and basically what you see now on the continent. So, I mean, it's a really, really heavy conversation. But, I wouldn't trust mainstream media with most of this because they usually filter things through the propaganda from the West. And China's no better because they're doing things now with the dollar that the West did by conquest. So, overall, yeah, we got a lot of problems going on over there on the continent.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Now with the Berlin Agreement, you said that'll outline a lot of how they carved out the colonies, the different countries, European countries.
They sat down with a map and just carved it up. Okay, France, you get West Africa over here. Germany, since you're new to the colonial game, will give you these these properties, Namibia and a few others, where they committed heinous atrocities, which you can, people are still trying to seek reparations for to this day. British, the Dutch, the Portuguese, all of these, I guess we can call them people, they did what they did over there. And, yeah, the record is really clear on it.
What he did over in the Congo, you know.
If Hitler is the standard for the most evil person who we've ever heard of, the fact that most people don't know King Leopold and his death count is somewhere in the range of 10 million, and that's not including the people who were maimed. Because they weren't mining enough of the resource for them that they would, you know, kill and maim people. So King Leopold, one of the worst humans to ever live.
Yeah, he was cutting their hands off and feet and things of that nature. Yep. Very good.
Yes, sir. You got
some.
So, yeah, man.
A lot of good information,
to add that
man.
To it, man.
No doubt.
You know how it is, man.
Oh, I know. You said the book is by Walter Rodney.
Yeah, Walter Rodney, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Great scholar from the continent. Really good book, man.
Very good. I'm definitely going to look that up, man. I appreciate you listening and chiming in with that wonderful insight.
Indeed, man. Y'all hold it down. I'm going to get off the phone and listen to y'all again on the computer.
All right. Appreciate it, my man. Thanks, man.
All right, y'all. Yep.
All right.
And thank you for calling in.
Nope, y'all have a good weekend.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back.
Lions Clubs International is a service or membership organization of over 1.7 million members worldwide. It was founded in 1916 in Illinois. Much of the focus of the Lions Club's work as a service club organization is to raise money for worthy causes as first responders. The Lions Club motto is We Serve. Local Lions Club programs include sight conservation, hearing and speech conservation, diabetes awareness, youth outreach, international relations, environmental issues, and many other programs. The Lions acronym also stands for Liberty, Intelligence, Our Nation's Safety. For more information, contact us at lionsclubs.org.
Do you know a youth in need of a place to live? Have you always wanted to make a difference in the city of Detroit, but not known how? The answer to both of these questions is Covenant House, Michigan. Covenant House is a youth homeless shelter serving 18 to 24-year-olds in the city of Detroit with education, resources, job preparation, and so much more. If you'd like to learn more about these programs, please call 313-463-2000 or look us up on the web at www.covenanthousemi.org.
Autism affects 1 in 68 children, sweeping all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Autism is a lifelong brain disorder that leads to untold challenges to the physical, financial, and social well-being of people with autism and their families. Resources are stretched thin. The Autism Alliance of Michigan, a collective voice for families across the entire state, uses resources to help families battle challenges right here, right now. If you or anyone you know needs help navigating the autism journey, contact the Autism Alliance of Michigan today, 877-463-AAOM, or visit them online at aaomi.org.
This is Jacqueline Jones Frederick of Jones & Frederick Enterprises, Inc. This incorporation consists of a tutoring business, a tutoring staffing, and a traveling business. We have serviced the community since 2007. Our clients are third graders to college students. We tutor in all academic subjects. Please call Jacqueline at 586-306-5487.
57 South is a user experience design and development shop located in Philadelphia. We have over 12 years of experience in the visual communication field with a long list of satisfied customers. We provide innovative solutions for existing and emerging platforms. Got a plan? Let our team of talented professionals help bring it to life. You can reach us at 215-701-3934. You can visit our website, www.57south.com. We look forward to kickstarting your next project. Thank you. Have a great day.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
And we're back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Tonight we're having a great discussion about the people in Africa who are starving. And, well, we're getting some insight into why. So if anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment, just press the one on your phone and you will be live streaming with us and you can have a conversation. So I wanted to go back to Colin because he was trying to do something to help his, and he has no problem letting everyone know that he is half African. He said he wanted to visit the sites responsible for him and many other black people in the African.
Don't do that.
Family for being forced into the hells of the Middle Passage. He wanted to see a fraction of what they saw before reaching the point of no return. And he said he spent time with the Ghanaian people from visiting the local hospital in Kita and the village of Atito to eating banku in the homes of local friends. Oh, here's some local friends and paying his respects to Kwame in Nkrumah Memorial Park.
Nkrumah.
Is that what it is? Nkrumah?
I've forgotten. I think that's what it is. Nkrumah,
okay.
Or something like that. Yeah. You know what is interesting? Can you hear me?
Yes.
What is interesting is that the late Malcolm X, what he tried to do was to join the African continent with the Asian, with African Americans here to make, to have a power base, the Organization of African Unity, that's what he called, to bring about the inhumanity that we were facing. And some of the African countries did bring that thing, bring it up as crimes against humanity during that time. And I think that was one reason why he faced elimination too, because he was trying to join us back with our African culture there to bring back up, to bring about the certain humanitarian freedom that all of us needed and we should be a part of, you know. I like the fact that, but I don't hear very much of too many black African Americans here who are reaching out to Africa. Now, I know from my church that we had years ago, we had a black church that we had a man, Andrew Foster, and he was a deaf man. He could not hear, he was hearing impaired. But he learned, he went to college, Gallaudet College, I think it's in Washington, that's known for helping the hearing impaired. He went there and he started the, he wanted, as a Christian, what he wanted to do was to helped people in Africa who were hearing impaired. He said, you give them a tract, they can't read, you can't do this. So he started 5 Nigerian schools in Africa. Because I remember as a young person, when I learned how to type, he'd ask us to come over and type things out for him at his office. He was stationed there, and he was very effective. In fact, he was, when the plane crashed, it's been about almost 20 years, he got killed in the plane crash that crashed, and it just, you know, coming back here to America. But he was adamant about them learning and educating the hearing impaired in Africa, and he did a wonderful job until the Nigerian government just came and took over the 5 schools. The 5 schools that he had started, and he'd done such a wonderful job, because he felt if you can try to tell them about it, they can't understand, they can't hear, they can't this, and a person who is hearing impaired is almost treated like, you know, like nothing in Africa, and he raised that awareness in he did very well in raising the awareness that they are people too who need to be evangelized. That's a black man that reached out to Africa, as far as I know. Now, Bishop Jake, he has that mega care that goes into other countries, but he was also stationed in Africa where he took a team of, I think he still does it every year, a group of medical people, black people, to reach out to the Africans there to give physicals, to help this and to help that. And he talked about a tribe, 2 tribes that was warring, fighting. And he tried to bring those 2 tribes together to stop fighting. And then he had the machines to dig for water so that both of the tribes could share in the water. That was one big problem in trying to stop the fighting and things of that nature. And Bishop Jakes, one of the times that he was over in administering, he talks about when he went to one of the points of no return, one of his African friends, they went for a long ride and stuff. And he said, he talked about how, you know, they showed him the point of one of the points of no return. But when talking about it, he said how it made him feel. Here you are, stripped of everything that you know and believe and trust to go, well, who knows where, to do who knows what, you know. He said it made him feel very scared and very empty, you know, if I can relate it, you know. Very scared, very empty. But the minister that was with him thought of nothing of it. They didn't even think, well, you know, it happened. Like they were selling people, they're used to that. It seems like the thoughts or the way people think of each other has to change before you can really bring about a unity that will help everybody, you know. And I think the gentleman who was talking about how when a president or something comes into power and he wants to really raise the standard for the people, they're usually assassinated. That was really interesting. He thought it was very interesting. And this one guy, his name was Joseph somebody, what he would do is go around and to recruit the young black men and women to fight. What he would do is have them, I think I saw a poster on it, he would have you stand up there and kill maybe your brother or your sister or your mother and father. And if you wouldn't kill them, then they would beat you and beat you and beat you until you did. This is a black man working on black children that way. In order to save them, they had to get up and kill their own parents, their own people. And then they would be a part of his army. They were trying to find a way to catch this man. But that's how he made up his army, through the young men and women that made them do that. And they got used to killing and killing and going through killing and killing and killing. So that's something that you have to deal with. And that's happening even now. I haven't heard that they've caught this man as of yet. But it was a very big problem there. Joseph Kony, I think his name was, if I'm not mistaken. But
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I heard about that. Trying to catch him. The United Nations was big on trying to catch this man who was doing that. Like you come across, you come into the field, and you make the young man beat the children, beat them until they give them something. You had to kill your parents, kill your mother, your father, kill your brother, or else they were going to kill you or beat you to death until you'd be glad to kill them. So it's a lot of things that's been going on there that, you know, You want to just, how can you bring about a unity or help them? You have to make the people able to help themselves. And this is a very big problem, very, very big problem in Africa, that they're just not able to. Now, my personal belief, and I'm not trying to glorify us because I know we still have a lot of problems here, but my thing was, I believe that it was our responsibility, even here in the United States, although we are going through things ourselves, to be able to pull together to help a lot of the African nations there. But I have heard that the way they look at the African Americans here, they feel that y'all were slaves. Why didn't you kill yourself? And, you know, they still look at us in terms of us being slaves, or just you, not there to really help. They will help. They will accept help from the white person more so than they would accept help from us. And they feel like we're trying to come over and trying to be like the white, you know, and coming to help them out, and they don't like it, you know. After all, we're still classified as slaves. Now, the only person I've heard that, I don't know what kind of outreach that Minister Farrakhan has going on in Africa. I don't know what it is, heard of anything like
Does
that.
Does he have one? I know Joyce Meyer goes
okay,
over
that's
there.
A white person.
They
you know,
dig
white
wells and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and also houses and helping the children. Marilyn and Sarah Hickey, they have what they call this saving Moses. In other words, saving the baby. Saving the babies over there. And, you know, I get tired of seeing the babies hungry and all of this, you know. When I look at my grandson and, you know, all of this, and it really bothers me to see. And that's the when a child gets to that point, they have really suffered brain damage, severe brain damage, you know, to be starved that way. In the Bible, it says it's better to be put to death with a sword than to go through starvation. Where your body reacts.
I would think so.
Beg your pardon?
I would think so.
Yeah, it talks about that. But I believe our big problem, our responsibility or our destiny was to be able to, as Christian people too here, especially the black churches, was to colonize, and not colonize, but to help the African people. I know Solomon's Temple, Bishop Bonner, his wife, she was stationed in Africa for a very long time, and he said support and things of that nature. And she built up that African ministry there, you know, but she's gone, you know, dead now, but she did build up a very strong African ministry there and serving the people.
You know, my
was,
church
you know,
in November is going to South Africa.
Uh-huh.
Well, not the entire church, but
yeah.
a few
yeah.
of the members are going to South Africa. I wanted to go to Africa for a long time. I don't know.
Yeah. But these people are still starving, you know.
Yeah, But, you know, they have cities just like we do.
They have what?
They have cities and hotels and things just like we do.
Yeah, they do, yeah. And then some of the places are, but I've heard that the most richest woman in the world lives in Africa. Now, I heard this. I've heard of this.
The
I
richest
don't know who
woman
she is,
in
but
the
I
world.
Heard it was asking. The most richest woman in the world is and lives in Africa. And she's an African.
So you talking
That's
about
what
that?
I heard. A black woman. That's what I heard.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, the most richest woman in the world. But then why don't you help the people out, you know? And as far as things of that, you know. But maybe when you start feeding and people don't have to worry about, you know, water and food, then they become a threat. Who knows? You know, maybe that's the attitude a lot of them have there.
Well, they said that the richest human that ever lived was an African king called Mansa Musa.
Oh.
And he would be worth probably $300-400 billion today with the wealth that he had. And he went across Europe. And, you know, he had taken gold. He had a caravan and had approximately about 600 million dollars with them, you know, in the currency back in that time. And you say he would go to a community and, you know, he had everyone with him. He changed the whole domestic, the whole economic situation of the places he was going, because they would leave so much money, and they would require so much on their way that it was it's pretty good. And I had just found that out, you know, a couple of years ago, and so I called myself educating my daughter, you know, who was in high school, and say, you know, have you know who the richest person that ever lived was? She said, yeah, Mansa Musa. Like, how you know? They talk about it in school. She said, he talked about it in school. And I just, you know, stumbled upon, you know, that information.
Well, they didn't talk about that when I was in school.
No, they didn't.
neither. And we didn't have an interview.
Yeah, it's either. Something.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, that is interesting. Uh-huh. But Bishop Jakes, that's the only person I know of, basically now. Now, we've had some people that go over to Africa. Some of the Ron Horton, who's one of the officials in Moody Bible Institute, and, you know, and he and a group of people to Africa. And he was saying that, you know, in trying to help, trying to be a help, but they seemed, I don't think it was a very good experience for him, you know. Just how can we help? The thing is, just how can we help ourselves as well as them? How
right.
can we help ourselves
we
as well
do?
As them? What can you do in order to be a help? A real help?
Donate to people.
You know,
like...
I heard that a lot of the donations there. If we've been donating like this and for years, then how come that continent hasn't moved up like you would expect it to? I know I heard a minister, a TV minister, talk about it. He said, he was told in order to increase his donations, they could show him how by showing him pictures of these starving African children and things of the nature, and people would send their money in to be of help. But then he said, although you're not under the obligation to send the money to them to help them, or just give them a little something, you know, whatever. But you'll get a gugaz of money. So people are giving. They've been giving. They've been doing. But they still have not moved to a great extent out of the clutches of starvation and lack of clean water. I was looking yesterday, and I listened to James and Betty Robinson, and this grandmother was crying, and it really touched me. Because she said not only is her children dying, but her grandchildren are dying because of the filthy water, the diseased water. The animals in the water, they have to drink the water, wash in the water, the parasites and things of that nature that get into the children. Even when you feed a child full of parasites, it makes them sick and it hurts to eat, you know, and things of that nature. And she was really crying about it. She says that most of her grandchildren have died because of the bad water, and she wished that she could die too. You know, she was crying about this, and it really touched me as a grandmother. And I said, Lord, what can you do? What can we do? There's got to be something that we can do as far as being a help to our own, you know.
And that's a good question. And we have another guest listener that would like to make a comment.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, you're on with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Did you have a question or a comment? 312.
Okay, you're on with the Let's Talk About It.
Okay, they dropped the call. So I looked up the Fularunso Alakija, was born July 15, 1951. And she's a Nigerian billionaire businesswoman, one of the richest African women and one of the richest black women in the world.
Yeah.
In 2014, she temporarily unseated Oprah Winfrey as the richest woman of African descent in the world.
Isn't that something?
Yes. A Nigerian billionaire businesswoman. I like the sound of that.
Yes. It's interesting to know how Oprah went over to South Africa. It was in South Africa. She started that girl's school.
That school, yeah. But you
yeah,
know
and
why?
She said because
she didn't have to deal with all the mess here in the States.
That you're trying to educate them. Those girls want to. They want to learn. I even had that experience even when I worked at the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. There's such a difference in attitude. They try.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I've heard they say about African Americans here, you have so much, but don't do nothing with it.
Now, I believe that.
They said, we have so much here. If you take advantage of what you have here, then it will grow. You know, they could, like at the ministry, they had to, you know, it's for drug rehabilitation. Some of them, you know, African men got on that. You know, you tell them you can either take a class or a enrichment class through Wayne County. You can go to school or college, but you had to do so. You could work, but they had chores around. They had to get up at a certain time, clean up their rooms, do their chores, eat breakfast, either go to the enrichment classes or go to the, you know, other classes that we had there, or they had to go get a job and start working, and we would have them pay 30% of their rent, was toward on their rent. But the African person, you know, that hadn't been here long, they did all of it, plus got a job, a part-time job. This one man, he could speak French, and he was trying to wait to get on one of the carnival boats, you know, during the season, going to different islands. And he got up early in the morning, made his bed, did this, he did everything. He had to do but one or a couple of things, you know. He did everything. Then he got a job at TGI Friday, part-time. And then he went to school. But then he put application in to get on that carnival boat, and he was waiting for that. Well, he got caught smoking in his room, okay? We had given him a single room, you know. He got caught smoking in his room. He had to come before the review board. I'll never forget it. He came before the review board, but instead of coming there trying to cover up, he had gone and wrote out what he had done and all of that, you know, all of that. And he passed it out to all the review committee. We looked at what, you know. And he was saying he was wrong, and he asked them if they would, you know, work with him because he was trying to do this, and that stuff. And because of him, you know, the way he handled the whole situation, we said, okay, put him on a contract, okay? And he can't smoke in his room. Here he is waiting for it. He took a physical. He's waiting to get on that carnival boat, waiting for them to send a ticket so he can go to Hawaii to catch the carnival boat to work on it. And he spoke French. And he was working, but he said he also had to pay child support. We took all that into consideration. Now he's thinking about how trying to wait to get this ticket to leave. And when that ticket left, because it finally came, he was gone that weekend. So he planned his own success. A lot of times, take advantage of what are your goals in life? What do you want to reach? You have to
Absolutely.
Work toward it. And
yeah.
This one guy, he said, well, I'm depressed and everything. He wanted to lay up in the bed. Well, no, you can't lay up in the bed. You have to get up and make your way. We had a lot of problems with that. We had to put a lot of people on contracts, and then when they wouldn't fulfill the contract, we had to let them go from the program. But I noticed that about them. And one man, you know, he would, you know, he had a personal problem, you know, but he would get up and do all his chores, do this and that, and that way he was very good. But that one personal problem he wouldn't handle, you know, and that was the problem. But he was really on the ball with everything else, you know. But they don't look at personal issues like we look at it, you know, as far as, you know, keeping yourself up and things of that nature. That was what he was used to, you know. But he did everything we told him to do. everything that,
well,
you know.
That's a good thing.
Which is interesting, yeah. But it's a problem.
I
how
mean,
can
I think
we help
people
them?
Respect you more if you come before them and don't try to lie your way out of anything. You know what I'm saying? You
yeah.
just say, I was wrong, and, you know, I apologize or whatever, but I did
yeah, this
do this, that, right. and the other. I think
but
you can
see,
appreciate
had a
somebody like
waiting
that.
Waiting for that ticket. Waiting for the ticket, yeah. Thanks so much for allowing me to speak on this subject, because it's something that really is burdening my heart. And I think a lot of Mr. Kaepernick for what he is doing, trying to do, in spite of all the problems he's facing with, as far as the NFL and things of that nature. Thanks so much, Jenny White.
Yes, and maybe at some point you might be able to contact him and, you know, you might be able to donate to his foundation or something.
Yeah.
That
we need to get more and more involved,
way.
You know. A lot
yeah,
of times,
we do.
I find a lot of times you get involved in someone else's problem, it seems like your problem becomes solved. As long as you're trying to solve your problem and never mind anybody else, you know,
right.
You,
right.
it stays with you. You know,
that's
boy, that happens real fast, you know. You wouldn't think of it in terms of that. It is. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for your insight, for your conversation, for your knowledge. I appreciate all of that. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks so much. Love the program.
You're welcome. Thank you. And any of my other listeners, if you're listening, if you would like to make a comment or if you would like to ask a question, you may do that now, because when we come back, it's going to be done. It went by, so that time went by so quickly. So we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with the final word.
Want to start a business or have tax issues? We know exactly how to handle your individual needs. We personalize each individual and give you the time required to focus on your needs. We audit you before the IRS stops. The IRS is not on your side, but we are. We set up companies, do tax preparation, tax and retirement planning, bookkeeping, IRS audits, and reviews. Please call me, Deborah Mitchell, owner of Mitchell & Company, for a free consultation at 248-354-5122. And visit my website, MitchellTaxAccounting.com.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
Okay, we're back with the Jenny White Show, and this is our final thoughts. We're going to say,
thank you.